AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app.
AM 570.
An LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney
Peet. An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peet.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
All right, Fred Rogan, Rodney Peet, and a good friend of ours. We've both known Byron a long time. Byron Scott is with us in the studio.
Byron
so
Scott!
So good to have you here, man.
My man, it's so good to be here with you guys.
Absolutely. Inglewood, pride of Inglewood.
Yes, sir. Yes,
I got to tell you
been
real quick
a long
before
time.
You get in.
Go
get
ahead.
Into with Byron. You know, my family, Fred knows this. I grew up in Arizona, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Dad was a long time football coach at the University of Arizona. So, you know, I remember because in football, he used to recruit L.A. all the time.
Right.
I remember he's telling me, oh, there's two kids coming out of L.A. It was Russell Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Russell Brown?
Yes, very well.
And Byron Scott, we got to get Byron. But then you went to Arizona State.
I went to ASU.
Went to ASU.
And Russell
man.
Went to U of A, and I went there on a recruiting trip, and it showed me a great time. I loved it. But then I went to ASU, and it was like, a couple of my boys were there already.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Sam Williams and Johnny Nash.
Were you with Alton Lister, too, or not?
Alton Lister, yep. Fat Lever. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take my butt over here to ASU.
Was Ned Walk the coach then?
Yes, he was.
Ned Walk.
Dominated.
Ned,
dominated.
And you know what? Ned Walk, honestly, with all due respect, because I covered Arizona State, I worked in Phoenix. Did he not have the worst breath in the world?
You know what, Fred? I don't remember that. I was never that close to Coach Wilk to remember that. So I'm going to leave that one alone.
All right. We've got a lot to get to this hour with you.
Oh, my God. That's so funny because, you do definitely remember those coaches that got up in the face and have
him. He knocked me out of the building. Jesus,
Dad. Hard to do an interview when you got to hold your breath.
I had a coach that, he had bad breath, number one, but he used to have that white film that you just get on the side of your But he liked to talk to you and he'd get all up in your face, too.
Oh.
You know, he liked to whisper to you so nobody would hear it, so he had to get close to you.
Oh.
Like, come on, man. Come on,
man.
All right. See what you did, Fred?
I'm sorry.
All right. So we have a lot to get to. And, you had a very successful playing career. You were a success as a coach as well. And the other night, with full transparency, Byron was in doing Going Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't talk about this on TV. I said, no, we're going to save this. Please run them down just as you did the other night. Because I said, what happens when they fire you?
Yeah.
Well, what are those conversations like? What are you feeling? They were all different, but all kind of the same. So take us down the list of what it's like when an NBA coach finds out that's it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to make sure this doesn't take too long. You know what I mean, Rodney? I'm going to try to cut it a little short.
That's why we saved it, but don't leave anything out. That's why Fred saved it for radio.
I know how Fred did. So the first coaching job I had, obviously, was in New Jersey. And we went to 2 NBA finals the next year. Rod Thorne called me one morning when I was taking my kids to school. Now, we were playing okay. We were in first place in division, but we just wasn't clicking as a team. And Rod called me. He said, Coach, how you doing this morning? I said, I'm good. Rod, how you doing? He said, I'm good. Can you meet me at the Marriott Hotel in the lobby for a minute? I said, sure. And I'm, again, this is my third or fourth year in coaching, so I'm not hip to all this stuff. I take my son to school, and I start driving down the highway. And about halfway before I got there, I start thinking, why you want me to meet me at the Marriott? His office is right here in the Meadowlands. Why we got to meet there? What's going on? What's happening? And right when I pull up, I just got this eerie feeling, I was like, oh, something's up. Something's up. So I get in. Rod said, Coach, how you doing? I said, I'm good, Rod. How you doing? He said, I'm good. He said, Coach, I gotta let you go. Just like that, right? So I said, what? He said, I gotta let you go. I said, oh, okay. I said, all right, well, Rod, I appreciate it. You gave me an opportunity. I really respect that. Admire you, love you as a guy, as a friend, and I just appreciate the opportunity.
Was this after? I'll let you finish. Was this after you guys had went to the finals?
After,
the year after.
After, yeah, the year after.
The year after, and was this during the season?
During the season.
So this is a third of a way
through the season. So we had played 20-something games, something like that.
Wow. Only a third?
Only a third.
Okay, so go ahead. So he said, I got to let you go.
And so, I took it with a grain of salt, and I drove home. And, halfway home, I called my wife, and I tell her, just got fired. And she was like, what? I was like, yeah, I just got fired. And I was a little stunned. So when I get home, you get all these calls, of course. And I said, baby, I'm not taking any calls. I'm going to just chill out for a little while. That's the first job.
All right. But you thought that Rod Thorne, and you said, I love you, handled that as well as he could. And you still have a great deal of respect for him, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Never. He never, promised me anything. He always had my back. Things go on. And I understood that, like I said, the team, after two straight years of going to the finals, for some reason that next year, we just wasn't hitting on all cylinders. And obviously, a lot went into it with the relationship that Jason Kidd and I had as well. So I think that has something to do with it, neither here nor there. That was the first one that Fred and I talked about.
All right, now go to the next one.
The next one is New Orleans.
This is a good one.
So New Orleans, the first year we win like 18 games, we get Chris Paul, and then we make some moves, and boom, we got, one of the best teams they've ever had in New Orleans. Win more games than they ever won in the history of the franchise. Mm-hmm. And after coming off one of our best seasons, the next year, after 9 games, they call me in. Now, by this time right now, I'm like, okay, hey, coach, can you come in a little early? We want to meet you in the office and talk for a little while. I was like, oh, okay, here we go again, right? So I go in here, and it's Jeff Bowers, who's a great guy. It's George Shin's son and his brother-in-law, who used to be in the ice cream business. He is now running basketball operations, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So they're both sitting there, and Jeff Bowers, who's the general manager, doesn't say a word. So I can look at Jeff. The only words he said to me was, how you doing, coach? You can look at him and see that this wasn't something that he had in mind.
But wait. Before you finish this, didn't they alter the roster a bit,
too? Oh, my God. Well, I'm not even going back. Rodney, that summer, we had a team. Our starting five had just won 56 games.
Uh-huh.
The next year, we went through all these injuries. We ended up winning 49 games. So coming in this year, they tried to trade Tyson Chandler. They basically gave away Rasul Butler.
Uh-huh.
We did trade Tyson. So two-thirds of my starting offense, our team was gone. And these were trades that I did not approve. I was like, guys, this is not going to work.
This is ice cream guys making the trade.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not going to work. I said, I don't know what you guys are thinking about. Well, this guy, and they're trying to give me an explanation why this is going to work. I said, I'm telling you, you're killing me. You're killing my team. Right. We just lost to San Antonio the year before in 7 games. I said, you guys are killing me. I said, but hey, it's your organization. So the ice cream man tells me in the meeting, coach, things are just not going well. I think we're going to have to go in a different direction. I told Fred, I said, I wanted to say, what direction is that? Because right now, you done took away damn near my whole team. We had to trade some guys off the bench. We gave away guys for consideration and cash. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, what direction are you going? Let me know, because I want to go in a different direction too.
Down.
I'm trying to go up. I'm trying to get to the finals to win a championship. I don't know what direction you're trying to go in, but okay, right? So I leave the building, and right when I come out, there's Chris Paul and David West. Coach, what's going on? I say, hey, guys, how you doing? Good. Where you going, coach? I said, I'm going to go to the office right quick. I'll be back. I got to go to the bathroom or something. So I go to the bathroom. I come back. They're in the office with them now.
Uh-huh.
So I go in my office, and I said, you know what? I better just get out of here for a little while. I'll come back and clean up my stuff when they're on the road or something. So I get out the office, get in my car. I mean, within 5 minutes, Rodney, I get in the car. Chris Paul calls me. What the F is going on here, coach? What the? I mean, he's going off. And this is not Chris Paul.
Right.
That's just not the Chris Paul that we know. I mean, he doesn't curse like this. I mean, just going off, I was like, CP, take it easy. He's like, no, they give you this crap. They expect you to win. He is going crazy.
Hot.
And I said, CP, listen, I'm a grown man. You keep playing basketball. You just do what you're supposed to do. I'm good. Don't worry about me,
Yeah.
And he's still just going on. So I said, hey, it's going to be okay. And then he got James Posey on the phone with him doing the same thing, right? So I leave there. That's number two.
Okay. And my, again, this is after you had just had one coach of the year.
Just one coach of the year.
So you go to the finals in New Jersey.
Yeah, now, like you said, this is the crazy. Just one coach of the year.
Yeah.
We were 3-6 the next year because of all these changes that they did. Yeah. And I did tell the general manager who told me that Mr. Shen wanted me to play these young guys. I said, well, tell Mr. Shen to come down and coach the team then. I said, because that's why we're in the predicament we're in right now.
Right.
We were 3-6 when they fired me.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so just went coach of the year. I get fired. I get a call from Greg Popovich and the late, great Dr. Jerry Buss, which I forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
They both called me when I got fired. I get home within 2 hours. Pop called me like, what the hell are they thinking about? What's going on? I said, Pop, it's all good. He said, come down here to San Antonio and help me. I said, help you. You're one of the best coaches in the history of the game. Help you, you know. And we had a good laugh about it. And the next day, Dr. Jerry Buss called me. And he said, how you doing? Everything good? I said, yeah, everything's good. He said, I don't know what they're doing down there, but when are you coming back home? I want you to come to a couple of games and sit in my box and we can talk. And that was, you know, an unbelievable gesture within itself. That was number two. Now, number three in Cleveland, you know, I'm getting the hang of this now. You know what I'm talking about, Rodney? I'm hip to it now. I'm getting the hang of this, you know.
You're seeing all the
signs. Seeing all of it. You know, I think it's Chris Grant was our GM in Cleveland who brought me in. And David Griffin was assistant GM.
Okay.
And they let me go on a real cold day in Cleveland, which is always cold. And this one I handled, man, I swear to God, I was like, okay, cool. No big deal. You know, I understand. You guys, you know, whatever. You know, the owner at that time and still the owner who escapes me.
Dan Gilbert.
Dan Gilbert. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it was most of his doing, you know. So I said, no big deal. I went out on the porch with my big jacket on. Got one of them heater lamps, put it right beside me, and grabbed a stogie and went out and smoked it. Because I was kind of thinking, you know what, that might be not a bad, you know, deal not being coaching here right now at this particular point.
Right.
So now the last one was the one obviously here in L.A.
Oh, hold on, hold on.
Go ahead, Fred.
Because this one's going to take a while, because there are multiple parts to the L.A. coaching story. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll get into that.
866-987-2570. This is Rogan and Rodney. Bringing you LA's best sports talk weekdays, noon to 3.
Rogan and Rodney.
Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan, and the great Byron Scott is in with us this hour. Well, we getting it all. We getting it all, Fred. We getting in deep with Byron Scott, man.
Ooh, boy, this is so much fun.
We're just getting started, too.
Y'all bringing back memories.
I love it.
Keep listening today because we've got Home for the Holidays. We'll give that away between now and 3 o'clock. Somebody's going to win the Home for the Holidays package, and it's ours today. All right, so Byron has now chronicled what happened when he coached in New Jersey, in New Orleans, and also in Cleveland. Now, let's get to the Lakers. And start from the beginning, Byron. They called you and take us through everything.
Well, first of all, I got a good friend named Bill Walton, who you guys know pretty well.
Yeah, we know him.
First coaching job I took, Bill said, you know, Byron, they hire coaches to fire coaches, just to let you know. Okay, Bill. All right, appreciate it. So the Laker job, am I talking about when they hire me?
Well, let's start then when you had the initial conversation.
So initial conversation with Mitch Kupchak. Guys, I went in, I think, 3 times. To talk to Mitch and to Jim Buss as well. And I was in the Bahamas when they called me and offered me the job. But when I took the job when I told them I would agree to the terms and everything, and when I came back, we had another meeting. And this is the meeting where Mitch says, you know, are you okay? You know, this is going to take a while. Are you okay with the rebuilding? I said, yeah, I'm okay with it. Are you okay with it?
Yeah.
I said, you know, because, you know, I'm going to take the hit. You know, I'm gonna take all these losses because I know at the end of the day, you know, what we're trying to get to and trying to build, you know, is gonna take time. So are you okay with it? No, yeah. Me and Jim, we know this is gonna take 3, 4, 5 years to build. So yeah, we okay. We all on the same page. Okay, sounds good to me. Played the 2 seasons, you know, and everything's going okay. You know, we're not winning games like we expected, you know, but we are trying to develop some of these young guys that we had. And then at the end of the season, that second season, you know, I hear him talk to the papers and everything. And he said, listen, under the circumstances, I thought, you know, Coach Scott did a really good job. Forward, next week. So I'm at home right now. I'm just chilling, you know, looking at TV. I get a call at 8 o'clock, and it's from Mitch.
At night.
At night.
Uh-huh.
And he says, hey, Coach, how you doing? I said, I'm good, Mitch. What's going on? He said, you busy? Can you come by the office for a little while?
At night.
At night.
Okay.
So you
and
know
the
me.
Season's over.
And oh, season's been over a couple of weeks now.
All right.
So, you know, I'm like, oh. No. You know, I was like I did. I said, nah. You know, we didn't have to talk.
Right.
We know this is gonna take time. You know, so
yes.
Nah, that can't be it. So yeah, let me go see what he wanna talk about. Get in my car, drive over to the office, get in his office, and he, you know, he wants a small talk for a couple of minutes, you know, everything good, you know. Coach, We're not gonna retain. We're gonna you know move in a different direction. And I said, what? We're gonna move in a different direction. You know, we haven't decided who we're gonna hire, which was a lie.
Right.
I already knew then, you know, because Luke's name was already being mentioned. You know, so I already knew that was a lie. And I sit there and I looked at him, Fred, and I swear, if looks could kill, he would have dropped dead right there. Mm. And if that would have been 15 years early. The way I was then.
The old Byron would have came out.
Oh, I'd have did a Michael Thompson on him too. Oh, man. I said, you know what? B, just get out of here. You know, so yeah. I stood up and I said, all right. Okay, Mitch. And he reached to shake my hand. I shook his hand. I said, all right. I said, I'll come back another day and, you know, clean up my office. So I leave. I go home. I'm sitting at home. My fiance, Cecilia, comes in. She walks upstairs. She sees me, and she just walked right back downstairs. She was like, no, I can see something's
she
wrong.
Knew,
right.
She yeah. knew.
And it took me about 15 minutes. I said, all right, I'm good. You know, door closed, the window's going to open. Everything's cool. I went back downstairs. Me and her were good. So about 2 days later, I said, let me go to the office and clean out my stuff. I start cleaning stuff out. I didn't know they were having a meeting or anything there. So I go in the office, and everything's good. I'm packing up stuff. I got my boxes going, and I'm taking stuff to the, you know, in this little dolly. I'm taking it to the car. I come back, and I come back in the office this last time, and Ryan West comes in for a second. I forgot to tell you, and he just said, Coach, you good? I said, yeah, I'm good. Ryan, you all right? Everything good with you? Yeah, we about to have a meeting. I was like, oh, okay. You know, so he leaves. Within 5 minutes, Mitch walks in. Uh-huh. And I'm still, you know, I don't stop. I keep putting stuff in my boxes. He said, how you doing? You know, I wish people could see my face on radio right now. I said, what? He said, how you doing? You okay? I said, yeah, I'm good. He said, did you, you know, what you expect and, you know, anything different? I said, man, I expected another year at least.
Yeah.
He looks at me, he says, that's fair. I said, what? That's fair.
That's all he said?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just stopped. I just stopped and I just, you know, stopped talking. I just turned around and started cleaning up more. And at this time, I'm not even talking, you know. So he finally just says, all right, well, what would you think about coming in a different, you know, a different position, you know, working with the organizations? You know, can I give you a call? I said, sure, Mitch. Yeah. So he walks out the room. I finish up, go home, tell my girl what happened and everything. She's shaking her head. A couple of weeks later, now I don't hear from him.
Right.
I don't get a call at all. I don't hear about another position with the organization. Nothing. Don't hear nothing. So now Magic goes on board, right?
Mm-hmm.
They fire Mitch. Oh, I get a call then.
Right.
You know, and I didn't recognize the number. You know, I had deleted that number. You know, I didn't need that number anymore, right? So I get a call and then a message, you know, this long message, but no name on it. You know, can we get together, have lunch or something? And I'm like, who is this? So I text back, who is this? And I get Mitch. And I said, what do we need to talk about? Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, things that we need to, you know, we've been friends and teammates for so long. I just think it's some things we need to kind of discuss. I said, I don't think so. I said, I'll tell you what, when I think there's some things we need to discuss, I'll call you. Click.
Wow.
That's it. Now, a couple of weeks go by, I'm playing golf at Bear Lair Country Club. And Rodney, he didn't hear all this, so I'm playing golf at Bear Lair Country Club.
Uh-huh.
With two really good friends of mine, Brad and Vile. And Brad's a member at Bear Lair, so he, and Brad's a character. Brad's one of those guys that we would have loved back in the day because he always started a lot of, you know what.
Yeah.
So we're playing, and we on the first hole. And when I got there, somebody told me Mitch was there. I said, okay. You know, so we on the first hole. So I'm on the green on the first hole. And I'm not looking around. I'm trying to eye a putt, you know. And Brad said, oh, hey, how you doing, Mitch?
He said, loud
as hell, you know. And I looked up, and there's Mitch. He's starting to walk down, you know, to the green. And he had his son with him, and I said hello to the son and everything. He comes down. He says, hey, how you doing? I said, I'm good. He said, you going to be around for a while? And Rodney, I looked around like this. It's the first hole, man. I was going to be here for 4 hours. We'll be here for 4 hours, dog. Yeah, you know. Yeah. He said, oh, okay, well, maybe afterwards we can talk. I said, all right. So I'm playing, you know, I didn't forget. And my boy Brad was dying.
Oh, I bet
he was. Like, man, that looked so uncomfortable. You know, he didn't even look right. He didn't even want to walk over here. I said, man, I ain't got nothing against him. I said, but I ain't got nothing to say to him.
Right.
So we play our round, had a great time. We went in afterwards, had drinks, and I done forgot all about it. Of course, Brad, you know, had a couple of drinks and eating. Brad said, hey, B.
He wanted to show.
Yeah,
huh?
B. He said, hey, B, where's Mitch? Didn't he say he was going to meet you here afterwards? I said, Brad, cut it out, man. Cut it out. So that was the four, you know, hiring and firings of the Byron Scott saga in my NBA coaching career. And that one took the cake because I really truly felt that that was a straight, you just straight lied to me.
Yeah.
You used me basically for 2 years because of my relationship with Kobe. That's really how I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, I'm like, look, it's all good. But it was.
So he never came back to Bel Air, to the country club, and you guys never talked about that?
No.
Or he never did that?
No.
Wow. You know, that is so bad, and it's, and it's one of those things that does, you know, does happen, you know, and all you ask as a coach, a player, whatever, all you ask is somebody be straight up.
Be straight up. Just be honest with you. Because I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel. I'm going to tell you at least my truth, you know, what I'm going to try to do on certain things. But I'm not going to sit here and look you in the face and bold-faced lie to you.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just not me. So I think even, you know, months after that, when people talked to me about, you know, other NBA jobs, I said, I got a bad taste in my mouth because of that last one. And that's where I was for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And did it bother, I mean, obviously it didn't matter where it was, but did it bother you even more because it was the Lakers?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, because
and you knew Mitch and you played with
him. Yeah, you know, like, and you think of this as family.
Yeah.
You know, I still do. You know, I still go to games. I still see Jeannie and give her a big hug. And, you know, especially when Magic got involved.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, that's even more of a hurt because, like you said, you think of this as more of a family. This is an organization that you gave your blood, sweat, and tears for 11 years that I played here.
Yeah.
You know, so you could never say nothing bad about the purple and gold to me. Never. You know, so yeah, it even hurt more because it was purple and gold.
Right.
When you were coaching, I mean, and to be very honest, because we have talked, you know, I knew some of the stuff that was going on with D'Angelo Russell.
Right, right.
And I could never, because I know what you went through with him, I personally couldn't get over it for you because of how you had to deal with him. And he was a kid that came in here. And emotionally, he wasn't a man, he wasn't an NBA player.
Right, he wasn't ready. And I don't think a lot of people understand, and Rodney knows this, you know, the mental part of professional sports is so tough. If you're not mentally ready, let alone physically, you know, physically he was okay, obviously, he had the physical tools, but from a mental standpoint of understanding what it takes every single day to get prepared for a game and how to prepare for a game and be ready for a game, he didn't have a clue. You know, he really didn't. And so the things that I was trying to do is, you know, yeah, show him tough love, and but also show him discipline and how to do this and be successful at it for a long time. And a lot of people took it the wrong way, which I didn't care, you know, because I knew behind closed doors the things that I was dealing with, you know, with a young, immature young player.
Yeah.
And I knew once he left, I said, watch, he'll start getting it. He'll start understanding what this league is about. And, you know, kudos to him for going to New Jersey or Brooklyn and playing the way he played. Now he's in Golden State. He got the big contract and all that good stuff, and I'm happy for him. I want all these guys to get paid, obviously, and make enough money to take care of themselves, their families, and hopefully generations to come. You know, but you have to sometimes lay down the law with players to make them understand that they're going to go through some things before they get to that next level.
Yeah, and you know that. I mean, Byron, you said it. It's something about, we say it in all sports, is just being a pro.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You have to learn how to be a pro and be a professional athlete. And a lot of guys don't get it, and sometimes they never get it.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. You can have all the physical tools that you may have, but if you don't get it mentally and you don't understand what it takes day in and day out, it's not going to work. But for you coming, you know, playing when you did,
right,
and then
right.
having to deal with from a player standpoint, right?
Oh yeah.
From a player standpoint, and then trying to get things across to some of the young cats that feel entitled the way kids are nowadays, right? Coming from where you and you know, dealing with Coach Riley back in the day, was hard nosed, you know, and then seeing what's happening with the young kids and trying to get through to them and through to them, not just from an outside looking in, that you've been there, and done that. How frustrating is that?
That was real tough, Rodney, because like you said, being that I had been there and won championships, and being in a situation where at that given time when a coach said we want you to do this, it was like okay, it wasn't. Well, I got to do that. You know, but, and my response to all those guys, they wouldn't say it. They would just give me a look. I was like, first of all, you got to do it because I said so. Second of all, because I won championships. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've done this. I'm trying to show you what it takes to get there. You know, so that was kind of my comeback. I had that respect of being a guy who played in the league and won championships, who had been successful. So a lot of them they could look at me and then they'd be like, okay, well, yeah, he did win. Mm-hmm. Yeah. he was on the team that won championships, so I guess we got to do this. You know, but it was difficult because, like you said, it was so many guys that would come here and they got their hands out like, what you going to do for me? And I always turned around and said, no, you got it wrong, son. You got to prove it to me. I ain't got to prove nothing to you. You know, and that was my mentality is, you know, you're a first round draft pick, you the second, third player pick. That's great. You know, that's just the beginning, because now the biggest hurdle is staying here for 10, 12, 14 years in this league. That's your biggest challenge. Getting drafted is easy.
Right.
Yeah, that's easy.
Right. What was it like in the final days of Kobe as you were there with him and he played those last years? What was that like?
You know what? For me, Fred, it was great. You know, I was with Kobe his rookie year when he was 17 years old. I saw this in him, watching him, you know, every day in practice and watching his work ethic. You know, so spending those last 2 years with him was great for me. You know, I think we rekindled that relationship that we had so many years ago. I think the respect grew deeper. You know, all the problems that people were telling me that you're going to have with Kobe, I never had a single problem with KB. I don't need you to practice today. I don't need you to do this. You know, this is what I want to do as far as your minutes. Everything was all right. All right, coach. You know, whatever you want to do. I mean, he was so great the last 2 years. And I think from his standpoint, he had got to the point where he knew that he had done about as much as he can do in this league. Uh-huh. And he was satisfied with it. Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever be totally satisfied, but I think he was at the point where he was like, you know what? I've given it everything I could. And when you do that as a player, you know, that's all you can do. And that's all you can give. You know, the only thing he was, you know, trying to do with some of these young guys is help them.
Right. But they didn't get it.
That's what I was going to say. Do you see the frustration in him? Because he was kind of like you were saying, he was that guy that, hey, let's go practice. Let's get it in. Let's get the work in. Let's do it. It'll show up on the court. But when he had to deal with some of the other guys that didn't have that same kind of drive or mentality, it was probably frustrating for both of you guys.
Yeah, it was frustrating. I mean, he told me. He was like, coach, they don't get it. You know, they don't get it. It was Jordan Clarkson was the one guy that was a mainstay that would come out and almost shoot with Kobe every single day. Kobe would go out, you know, an hour and a half before practice and say, I got to make 500 shots. Mm-hmm. And Jordan would be the one guy that would join him, you know. But everybody else, it was, you know, D'Angelo, I had to put in a rule because we had practice at 11 o'clock. He walked on the floor at 10:55, shirt out. I said, look, man, you not a 10-year pro. You still got to learn how to you know, get better at your craft, which means you should be out here 30 minutes, an hour before practice, working on your craft. So I said, I'll tell you what, everybody in this room right now, which we had a lot of them, I said, if you got 3 years or less in this league, get your butt in this gym at 10:30 and be on the floor ready to work out with some of our coaches. I had to put in a rule to do that, which, you know, back in the Lakers days, Magic was on the court. I was on the court. Coop was on the court. The only one that really wasn't there was Cap.
Right.
But Cap had already played 15 years. What I mean? Everybody else was there before practice even started. We had a lather up already before we even started practice. And these guys today, at least, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when I was coaching, it was like you had to, it was like pulling teeth to get them out there on the court.
All right, we've got to talk about what's next for you. And we also have to talk about this upcoming HBO series concerning the Lakers.
Rogan and Rodney.
Rodney Pate.
Red Rogan.
Weekdays, noon to 3, right here.
AM 570, LA Sports.
.com.
Rogan and Rodney.
Rodney Pate.
An athlete.
Rodney Pate.
A father.
Rodney Pate.
An LA icon.
Rodney Pate.
And this guy.
Red Rogan. AM 570, LA Sports.
All right, it's Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, Byron Scott with us today. Now you got to hear one more story. And then we're going to move forward. But Byron, when you were coaching and playing as well, when you guys were going on the road, you had to be at the plane at a certain point in time, right?
Yeah.
Now, how did that work?
Well, every coach is different. Mine was real simple. We had practice at 10 o'clock, and normally, you know, you got an hour or so before the plane leaves, you know, after media and everything. So I made it a standard time, 2 o'clock. Have to be on the plane by 2 o'clock. Anything after 2 o'clock is a fine. At 2:15, no matter what, we're leaving. No matter what. So we had an incident 1 year when I was in New Orleans where we had two, really. One, the first one was 2 o'clock came around, and you know, everybody was on the plane but two people, Julius Wright and Thomas Scott, my son. Well, Julius Wright came at like 2:05. Players wasn't happy about that because he had been coming late on a number of occasions. Well, 2:15 hit, and Terry, who's our trainer, said, Coach, it's 2:15. Thomas not here. What do you want to do? I said.
And Thomas was doing what for you?
Thomas was my video coordinator.
Okay.
So I said, Terry, what's the rule? Well, you said 2:15, Joe. We leave. I said, we leave then. I said, shut the door, tell the pilots, let's go. So we shut the door and we start on the runway. And Chris Paul starts yelling, hey, Coach, there's Thomas. He's right over there. He's right over there, Coach. And I said, he's not on the plane. Let's keep going. So we leave. We get in the air. And Chris Paul, you can hear the players in the front, you know, talking. And Chris Paul said, hey, man, Coach Scott just left his son. You don't think he'll leave us? Message got across, right? Message got across. But Julius, I guess, didn't really get the message.
Uh-huh.
And Julius was coming late and late, and the players started getting annoyed by it. And so we had another flight that we were about to take, and the players went out after practice, flattened all Julius Wright's tires. They put cereal in his trunk. They put milk in there with the cereal. Then they put Flexol, ketchup, and mustard on the trunk, on the hood, and on the front part of the car as well, right? So they do all this stuff, and then they go to the plane. Well, Julius comes out and sees it and just goes crazy. He goes crazy. This is the first time that I said, okay, we can't leave at 2:15 because he ain't going to make it.
I came out
and saw it, and I went back in to try to talk to Julius, who was going berserk. And I went to you know, grab the door to open it to talk to him. He slammed the door back, and I said, "Okay, this ain't the time to talk to this young man. I'm gonna let him have his space." And so I went in and, you know, took my shower, and I went to the plane. So I already knew. I said, "Terry, we're not leaving at 2:15. This kid has to get a, you know, either tow, you know, he got to get another car. One of his buddies, somebody's gonna have to come get him to bring him to the airport." So he gets there like 2:20. And he walks on the plane, and he goes off. You know, you MFs and this and that, you did. And Tyson Chandler stood up and said, shut your you-know-what up, first of all. You always late. And the players were going at it. And Paul Pressey, my head assistant, said, yo, Coach, you want me to go in front? I said, no. Let's see what happens. See what happens. So Tyson was going off because Tyson's very emotional. You know, so Tyson was yelling and screaming back at him. Chris Paul, who's Mr. Calm, he got up and he starts saying something. Julius, you just can't be late. You know, this is the rules. Coach has rules, and you gotta abide by them. You can't be late. And then David West, who was our intimidator, our quiet intimidator, mm-hmm. just looked at him and said, "Yeah, man, you can't be late no more. You understand?" And that was pretty much it. Julius, sit down. You know, Tyson, sit back down. We went off on our trip, and Julius was never late again.
Oh, man. I bet he wasn't.
All right, so you've been away from coaching for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And you want to get back into it, right?
I do, Fred, but on the collegiate level. You know, I watch a lot of college basketball, and I just love college basketball. You know, I think that the purity of the game, and I know a lot of these guys are going to be one and done. I don't necessarily look at one of these big-time universities where I'm going to have guys for 1 or 2 years. You know, I want to be at a university where I can have these guys 3 years, 4 years. You know, so obviously not a major, major school.
Like a mid-major.
Like a mid-major, you know, where I can really try to affect some of these guys on and off the court and really teach them what this is all about. Basketball-wise and life in general, mm-hmm. you know, what they're going to be facing after school and things of that nature, and how many doors are going to be shut in their face, and how they got to continue to just pursue their dreams. But yeah, about 6 months ago to a year, I started getting that itch, you know, and especially with young people. You know, I love being around young people. I love their energy, their innocence, and I think it would be something that would be a lot of fun. Now, obviously the recruiting part wouldn't be real fun probably to me, but I would go out and try to find the best recruiter I could, and you'd go do all the recruiting. I'll come in and close the deal. But I'm really interested in it, and I think it would be a lot of
fun. That's great. So you mentioned the one and done. What do you think about that? The move to letting high school kids come out, and if you go to college, you got to go for two. I mean, what's your thought process would be the best scenario?
I thought a long time ago, Rodney, when Commissioner Stern even thought about this, this one and done and guys coming from high school, I thought 2 years would have been perfect. I really did. I thought making guys go to college for 2 years, they get a little bit more physically ready as well as mentally ready. And who knows, after 2 years, you might find out that you really like college life. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because my 4 years in college, and I know you at SC, yeah. I mean, I had a ball. I really did. And it taught me so much. You know, I think a lot of these guys, they leave after that 1 year and they're not ready. You know, mentally, physically, they're not ready. And another year would have did them so much better. And I always thought that it should have been a 2-year limit to guys. They have to go to college for at least 2 years. And I thought they would be a whole lot more prepared for the NBA. But, you know, the Stern, you know, David Stern at that time didn't see it that way. And we went with the one and done. And, it's been okay. You know, mm-hmm. it's been okay. You've had a lot of guys who have been ready, and you had a lot who haven't been ready.
Yeah, but the real issue is, when you are playing in the NBA, that's a man's game.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And when you're 18, 19 years old, unless you're Kobe or LeBron or somebody like that, you're a kid.
Yeah.
You're a kid playing in a man's game.
Yeah.
You're not ready.
You're not. And go back to Kobe. As great as Kobe is, he had to wait a year.
Right.
You know, when he came in, my last year with the Lakers, his rookie year, you know, he wasn't ready maybe mentally. Physically, like you said, he had all the tools. I mean, he was unbelievable. But he didn't understand the game, and he didn't understand the concept of NBA basketball at that time.
Right.
And it took him a little while, you know. But, you know, you take that example, and then you can look at Kevin Garnett, who came in right away, was put in a situation where he played. But two different situations, because he's playing in Minnesota. They don't have a winning organization.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, they don't have a franchise that have expectation. Yeah. You come to Purple and Gold, expectations of championship, so we can wait on you, so to speak. You know, so I mean, hindsight's 20/20. You know, I have my feelings about it, but I always felt that 2 years would have been the best.
Right.
All right. Before we let you go, HBO was coming out with a limited series on the Showtime Lakers, mm-hmm. and the bullet point is it's about the private lives of everybody involved with the Showtime Lakers. Before we go any further, is there anything you want to tell us about that?
Hey, Fred.
Get it out.
I'm going to tell you this. I don't know how they're going to do that because I haven't talked to nobody on there about my private life. So I don't know what angle they're going at. But I know we talked about this last year. They were talking about doing a show about the Lakers Showtime basketball team. And we were trying to figure out guys who would play, what actors would play, all our guys and
right.
Who would play Pat Riley and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to it whenever it comes out, but I think they better call me and start talking to me about what my private life is or was.
Are you Magic James and right. Kareem gonna be like who's telling all these
telling
stories?
Lies.
Who's telling all these stories?
Yeah, y'all got this mixed up.
Y'all gonna end up at AC Green's house.
Hey, was he really a virgin?
Fred, I'm leave. Hey, Fred, I'm leave that alone now. I'll leave that alone. That's my boy. Junior's my boy.
Oh God, Byron, thank you for doing this.
Oh,
what a
Fred,
great hour.
Pleasure. Good seeing you guys,
fantastic,
Rodney. Good
man.
Seeing you.
Good to see you.
Haven't
brother.
Seen you in a while, brother. So good to see you.
You too, as well, man. This was fun.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Keep us posted now on the coaching search.
Yes, I will. I will.
Because you're going to get a job. You deserve it. And wherever you go, you're going to turn them into a bunch of winners, not only on the court, but in life.
Well, thank you, Fred. I appreciate that.
Good seeing you, Byron.
You too.
Weekdays at noon. Fred Rogan and Rodney P. After the Herd.
And on the iHeart Radio app.
Rogan and Rodney.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.